When we think of automation, I feel like our minds almost inevitably default to the classic factory assembly line. You know, you picture this massive, rigid conveyor belt.
Right, like a car factory.
Exactly. A piece of raw metal goes in, the exact same sequence of robotic arms welds it, stamps it, paints it, and out pops a perfectly identical car just over and over again. It's totally predictable.
And completely inflexible.
Right. You can't just toss like a bicycle frame onto that car assembly line and expect the robots to magically figure it out. But today we are taking a deep dive into a technical dispatch that completely shatters that assembly line myth.
It really does.
We are looking at a post from April 23, 2026 from a series called Shipping with Claude Code. And our mission today for you listening is to explore how a single AI workflow actually bends, like it morphs into entirely different shapes depending on what you're building.
And it provides this rare, I mean, incredibly detailed look under the hood. The source breaks down how a developer is using an AI design and implementation pipeline across three radically different software products.
Specifically using Claude Design and that orchestration tool, big task, right?
Yeah, big test. We're talking about an entirely automated workflow that somehow understands context, which is wild.
Okay, let's unpack this, because there is a massive core conflict in this dispatch between how a process looks on paper and how it behaves in the wild.
Oh, absolutely.
Because on paper, the pipeline this developer outlines looks exactly like that factory conveyor belt I just mentioned. It's perfectly linear.
Right. It's step one, two, three.
Yeah. It starts with a brief, then the AI does a visual exploration, usually generating like six different design directions. Then the human developer picks a winner.
The human bottleneck.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the winning design gets locked into a reference file, literally called handof.md. And finally, the big task tool ships it into actual code.
So the mechanics seem completely static, and it actually establishes very strict constants to prevent the AI from, hallucinating a mess.
Like what kind of constants?
Well, no matter what is being built, every single UI phase requires mandatory visual verification. The system uses a framework called Playwright to take literal automated screenshots of what the AI just coded.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, and then it compares those pixels against that handof.md design reference. That rule never bends.
Which brings up an immediate red flag for me.
Okay.
I mean, if you're listening to this and thinking about your own dev pipeline, you know that if you use the exact same standardized tools and the exact same rigid verification steps for every project.
Every product should come out identical.
Exactly. If the machine is static, shouldn't the output look and feel the same? Like it's the fast food drive-through problem.
What's fascinating here is that it completely flips the script. The pipeline doesn't actually force a single monolithic shape onto the product.
Oh, interesting.
The author reveals that while the tools like Claude Design, Big Task, Playwright, while they stay the same, their deployment strategy morphs entirely based on the starting state.
So the constraints of the specific code base actually dictate the pipeline's shape.
Precisely.
Okay, let's test that bending theory on the most frictionless environment possible. A completely blank slate.
The Greenfield Project.
Yes. The source introduces us to a product called Elon. It's planned as this journal-like app for creators. And the developer notes that the brief was literally just one paragraph.
Barely anything to go on.
Barely anything. They just had this vague intuition that the app needed to feel slow and tactile.
Yeah.
But there is no existing code base. There's no legacy architecture, no visual language, just nothing.
And because there are absolutely zero constraints pulling the design in any specific direction, the pipeline shape becomes incredibly wide.
Wide how?
Well, the exploration phase just goes into absolute overdrive. The AI isn't worried about breaking a back-end database, because there isn't one.
Right, there's nothing to break.
Exactly. So it takes that tiny brief and casts a massive net. It generates six completely different visual directions.
And they eventually converge on a direction called film stock, I think.
Yeah, film stock.
But the detail that absolutely blew my mind here was the time disparity. The AI generated all six of those exploratory directions, like fully conceptualized visual identities, in just 20 minutes.
That's absurdly fast.
20 minutes. But it took the developer half a day to manually decide which one to actually pick.
A 20-minute machine sprint followed by a 4-hour human traffic jam.
Yeah. Which makes you want to ask, I mean, is this the new reality of AI? Where the creative generation is basically free, but human taste and judgment are the ultimate premium bottlenecks.
The author explicitly points that out. In this greenfield scenario, exploration is cheap, but judgment is what you pay for. AI builds the haystack almost instantly. Finding the needle requires human taste.
That's wild. But once that human judgment call is made, you know, once film stock is locked in, the underlying mechanics of how Big Task executes the code are crazy. I really want to talk about the sub-agents.
Oh, the technical rigor here is fascinating. Once Elon's direction is locked into that handoff f.md file, the system doesn't build the app sequentially.
Doesn't just do page one, then page two.
Not at all. It deploys 24 AI sub-agents, and they are working entirely in parallel.
Wait, 24 at once?
At the exact same microsecond, they are checking 24 different visual screenshots, those Playwright PNGs we mentioned earlier, simultaneously.
I was trying to visualize how a machine orchestrates that without just like completely crashing. It's like running a massive printing press where every single page of a book is being checked by a different high-speed camera all at once.
That's a great way to put it.
But the main thread of the developer's program isn't actually looking at the 24 pictures, right? That would be too heavy.
Right. Asking a single thread to process 24 raw image files sequentially would create a massive computational bottleneck. It would defeat the purpose.
But what does it do?
The main thread just reads a binary pass-fail summary matrix returned by those 24 sub-agents. It's purely looking at ones and zeros.
Like, did the padding match? Yes or no?
Exactly. Did the hex code match? Yes or no? This allows the system to remain blazingly fast while performing incredibly dense visual quality assurance.
So that's the utopian blank slate. You can move fast, deploy two dozen parallel agents, and cast this huge net when there are no users around to notice.
Because there are no consequences yet.
Right. But what happens when you introduce friction? Real users, real legacy code. How does this pipeline bend when the software is already operating on a live patient?
That requires a massive shift in strategy, and the developer experienced this with a project called Shishwan.
Okay, tell me about Shishwan.
So this is a live application. Real people are using it every day. And it's structurally complex. It's spread across seven wildly diverse product categories. We are talking about flows for meditation, for divination, and even for product photography.
And unlike Elon, the brand DNA for Shishwan already exists. The source says it has an established Eastern contemplative vibe, like specific earth palettes and heavy reliance on serif fonts.
Which means you are no longer searching for a visual identity. You are trapped by the one you already have. Because of that constraint, the shape of the AI pipeline shifts dramatically. It entirely skips that wide six-direction exploration phase we saw with Elon.
Right, because if you're renovating a busy restaurant while you are still actively serving food to your customers,
yeah,
you can't just knock down all the walls at once to see how a new floor plan looks.
You run everyone out of the building.
Yeah, you got to do it section by section. You update the bar on Monday. You renovate the booths on Tuesday. A sudden, massive exploratory redesign would have completely broken the app for Shishwan's existing user base.
Precisely. So the AI pipeline bends into this very slow, incremental, category-by-category migration.
Which sounds safer.
It is safer, but the author notes that this slow migration was actually much harder on the AI than the blank slate project.
Really? Why?
Because the true expense here wasn't design generation, it was maintaining consistency.
Oh, I guess if they are moving category by category, the vibe drift must be a nightmare. I mean, meditation requires an entirely different interface layout than a product photography dashboard.
Totally different.
The source mentions a specific tool used here called impeccable.normalize. I assume this is operating like an automated style linter on steroids.
A semantic linter on steroids is a perfect description because AI agents are notoriously bad at consistency. They hallucinate UI components constantly.
Like making up new colors.
Exactly. Left to its own devices, an AI might invent a slightly different shade of blue for a button or decide the padding on a photography grid should be 12 pixels instead of 16.
And over seven categories, that adds up.
It compounds into a chaotic, fragmented user experience.
So impeccable. Done normalize. Just mathematically audits the AI's output against the master brand guidelines.
Constantly. As the AI sub-agents are rebuilding these categories, and they are doing this in separate Git work trees so they don't trigger merge conflicts with the live code, this normalize function acts as a ruthless watchdog.
Sniffing out visual drift.
Yes. If the product photography interface starts wandering away from those core earth palettes or serif fonts, impeccable.normalize aggressively flags it. It forces the agent to rewrite the component before it ever compiles.
That's amazing. It ensures the migration happens without losing the brand's established soul.
Exactly.
So we've seen how AI handles a completely blank slate, casting a wide net. And we've seen how it tiptoes around a live app, locking down its exploration to maintain consistency.
The two extremes.
Right. But both of those scenarios assume a single unified environment. The real nightmare for any development team is when those environments fracture. Like, what happens when an application has to exist across completely different platforms all at the exact same time?
Ah, the multi-headed beast. The source details this exact scenario with a project called Pompanel.
Pompanel. The author describes it as a monorepo. And, you know, for you listening, we aren't going to get bogged down in deep computer science definitions, but the critical context here is friction.
Major friction.
Yeah. A monorepo means all these different apps. There's a Telegram bot, a web interface, an internal admin dashboard, a mobile app. They're all sharing the exact same underlying code base and database architecture.
And they are planning a version 2 redesign to unify the visual language around this Eastern metaphysics yin-yang vibe.
But you cannot force one uniform look across all of those distinct surfaces. I mean, a Telegram bot interface fundamentally operates differently than a complex admin web dashboard.
It just wouldn't work. So the pipeline bends a third time. Instead of exploring random visual directions like in Elan or meticulously migrating a single style like in Sichuan, the AI runs three parallel expressions of the same core brand.
Expressions, not directions.
Right. The developer categorizes these expressions beautifully. First is paper, which uses a warm cream palette.
Okay.
Second is night watch, which is dominated by indigo and ink gold. And third is modern, utilizing off-white and jade.
And these are not competing designs for the client to choose from, right?
No, no. They are three distinct active moves of the exact same visual language.
So what does this all mean if you're listening to this and thinking, why go through all this architectural trouble? Why not just build a simple dark mode and light mode toggle and let the users choose what they want?
Which is what most apps do.
Exactly. But the author actually addresses that. And it comes down to function over aesthetics.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's a crucial distinction. A user-toggled dark mode is just a preference. These expressions are assigned strictly by the surface's role.
The platform dictates the mood.
Yes, because the mood serves a functional psychological purpose.
Right. Like, they hard-coded the warm cream paper expression for user onboarding, because onboarding needs to feel approachable and light.
You don't want to scare them away.
Totally.
But
they force the indigo night watch expression for the divination flows, because that specific user journey requires a sense of weight and gravitas.
And then they reserve the stark off-white modern expression for the analytics dashboard to provide extreme data clarity.
Because if a user was allowed to toggle their analytics dashboard into the heavy, shadowy night watch mode, I mean, it might look incredibly cool, but they wouldn't be able to easily read their own data charts.
The design is entirely subservient to the function. But pulling this off technically, inside a monorepo requires a massive escalation in the tool's behavior.
Because everything is connected.
Exactly. Because Pompanel shares backend architecture, specifically SUPA-based database schemas and intertwined payment dependencies, a single AI visual tweak on the web dashboard could accidentally cascade and break a database query for the mobile app.
Oh, wow. So the stakes are infinitely higher than just, like, an ugly button.
Precisely. Which is why the big task tool shifts into what the developer calls Tier 4 full GSD autonomous mode.
Tier 4. Sounds intense.
It is. With Elan, we had 24 parallel AI sub-agents checking screenshots. For Pompanel, because we have four different platforms, three different expressions, and multiple user rights within each, the system dispatches 96 parallel sub-agents.
Wait, 96 agents running visual verification simultaneously?
Simultaneously. And they aren't just checking colors. They have to verify that the UI changes haven't violated the shared SUPA-based schemas.
Oh, because of the dependencies.
Yeah. The author notes that per PNG parallel dispatch becomes absolutely non-negotiable at this scale.
I bet.
Having the main thread aggregate 96 structured binary vertex from subagents takes seconds. But asking a single human developer or even a single AI thread to manually read, process, and verify 96 raw visual screenshots across multiple platforms
is to ensure a database wasn't broken.
Right. It's a computational and logistical nightmare.
It is a mind-boggling scale of automated QA.
Yeah.
But, you know, it brings up a really glaring question. all of these different pipeline shapes, the wide, fast exploration of Elan, the careful, highly linters migration of Sichuan, the massive parallel expressions and schema checks of Pampa and Mouth, they are undeniably impressive.
Absolutely.
But how does the automated system actually know which one to use? Like when you type in a prompt, how does the tool know if it's looking at a blank slate or a multi-headed monorepo?
The brain behind the bending is a specific initialization step in the big task tool called phase 0.0.
Phase 0.0, the auto detection phase.
Yes. Before the AI writes a single line of code, before it generates a single playwright screenshot, phase 0.0 scans the product's environment.
Wow.
It uses what the author calls bash heuristics to make an autonomous judgment call on which pipeline shape to trigger.
And bash heuristics.
Yeah.
And just to clarify the mechanics there for a second, this is essentially the AI running command line scripts to sniff out the file structure, right?
Pretty much.
Like it looks around and says, I see a package.json file, but absolutely no index.html or existing CSS files. This must be a greenfield backend project.
Exactly. It looks for legacy directories. It sniffs out the presence of shared database config files. It counts the active branches. It basically mathematically deduces the starting state of the product.
Okay, but I have to challenge the reliability of that. I mean, relying on bash heuristics to dictate an entire deployment architecture sounds incredibly brittle.
It's definitely a risk.
It's like a train switch operator in a massive high-speed rail yard. If the operator flips the switch to the left, the train goes to the Greenfield factory and starts building fast. If they flip it to the right, it goes to the live app renovation yard.
Right.
But if the AI misreads a complex legacy code base, you know, if it flips the switch wrong,
yeah,
doesn't just delay the train, it bulldozes a live application.
Yeah.
Does the author address how risky that initial detection is?
Oh, they do. The author acknowledges it as the single most critical point of failure in the entire workflow.
Really?
Yeah, it is their ultimate warning to other developers.
Yeah.
Do not force fit a product into a pre-decided pipeline. If phase 0.0 gets the profile wrong, if it sniffs the directories incorrectly and assigns the wrong shape, the entire downstream flow fails catastrophically.
You end up trying to rip down all the structural walls in a busy live restaurant.
Exactly. Or you end up cautiously tiptoeing around a completely blank canvas for no reason.
But if phase 0.0 actually gets it right,
if it gets it right, it creates a genuinely context-aware ecosystem. The developer explicitly notes that when phase 0.0 correctly identifies the product's constraints, the AI adapts completely on its own.
So running those 24 or 96 sub-agents without requiring any human hand-holding.
Zero. It just works.
It stops being a dumb conveyor belt and becomes a responsive architectural collaborator. Which, honestly, really brings us full circle to the core lesson here.
It does.
If you take one thing away from this deep dive into Claude designs and the big task pipeline, it's that the tools of the future are heavily standardized, but how you apply them never should be.
That's exactly it.
Whether you are building from absolute scratch, meticulously migrating a live user base, or wrestling with a massive multi-platform monorepo, the underlying AI is the same. But you must let the state of your code base dictate the shape of your workflow. The friction of the product is what gives the process its shape.
It's a profound evolution in engineering philosophy. We are finally moving away from forcing software through rigid pipelines and moving toward pipelines that intelligently mold themselves around the software.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Because while the AI is doing all this incredible heavy lifting, like automatically sniffing out directories, bending its shape, running 96 parallel QA agents, it leaves us humans with a very specific, maybe somewhat terrifying, new role.
This raises an important question, one that the 20-minute generation time of the Elan project really forced us to confront.
Yeah.
If AI makes generating brilliant new ideas, exploring vast visual directions, and writing thousands of lines of code almost instantaneous and practically free.
Which it did.
Right. And it leaves human beings solely responsible for taste, for judgment, and for agonizing over which option to pick. How long until our own organic ability to make a decision becomes the ultimate bottleneck in human innovation? Are we truly prepared for a future where we spend 99% of our working lives not building, not creating, but simply standing at the end of a lightning-fast digital assembly line, acting as permanent editors to an AI's endless stream of creations?